Well, welcome again to another end of the week market recap. Kind of an exciting week for corn here. We did have a WASDE there Tuesday. Not a lot of changes, but on the week, corn closed up 8¾ cents. Spreads narrowed up. March, May was in for the week, was in narrowed up a half cent. The May, July narrowed up 2½ cents. We did have some hope there. You know, we had the Goldman roll this week, and it did look like from a spread standpoint that for a bit there, you know, we were going to get to that, 15, 16 level in the March, May, but she tightened back up in here today, closed at 12 and a half. We've got a lot of offers in there at that 14 and a quarter, 15 type level. So maybe we'll see that here next week, but definitely, people are still kind of on the edge of their seat here as far as tariffs. You know, there was, the talk with the Chinese steel and aluminum tariffs of 25%. Nothing agricultural this week was spoken of, but, I kind of throw this warning out there with Doge and what's going on, and we're only 3 weeks into this administration, but who knows? There was the new USDA person in yesterday and saying this morning that Doge is already been involved with the USDA and looking at the books there. So we could see some surprises in agriculture here in the next couple of weeks, like we've seen in those other departments of government. So start off the week, pretty decent inspections, 1.3, very, near the high end of the range. It seems like, last week there was a lot of talk of bird flu. That was pretty quiet this week. I know there was some stuff in New York there at the very beginning of the week. But again, it's pretty quiet. Would look for that to, if there is some issues, pick up here as we get into the first part of spring. We think about bird migration and stuff like that. So WASDE, like I said, was pretty ho-hum, left ending stocks at 1.54. That's a stocks to use of 10.2. We've always claimed that, somewhere around that 10% stocks to use kind of justifies, $5 corn. And that's basically where we sit here today in the corn market. The only thing that the USDA did change domestically was they raised the farm price for corn 10 cents. Globally, a little bit different situation. Another drop to the world stocks, that dropped world stocks 3 million tons to 290. That was about 2¼ million tons lower than what the average estimates. The cuts came from 1 million tons out of Argentina and 1 million tons out of Brazil. It does seem like maybe Brazil is not near as bad as what we thought as far as delay of planting and getting that safrinha crop in. Seems like things have kind of picked up this week. CONAB was out this week as well. And, they raised their corn total from 119.6 million tons to 122. So definitely a little bigger number there out of Brazil in the corn. And obviously we got a lot of growing season to go to see where that crop's at. Cash markets here in the U.S., we did have a couple of flash sales, one to Unknown there Wednesday and another this morning, 100,000 to Columbia. The SIP market for the week's up 6 cents, but I think a lot of that has been freight driven. The FOB bids haven't really changed much. I mean, a nickel of that went to barge freight for the week. Eastern basis, unchanged on the CSX, but up 2 cents on the Fort Wayne markets. Western markets definitely have a firmer tone. I'm showing Hereford up a nickel on the week and PNW up a dime, but you've got BN freight up substantially on the week with some crew issues and some stuff like that going on with the weather. Group three kind of came up off the mat here and they were up 2 cents on the week. I had Decatur basically unchanged. Today and yesterday did seem like there was quite a little flurry of ethanol plants scurrying for May and June type delivery. You did see a couple plants looking for some quick ship March stuff, but you know, guys are out here pushing that $5 bid in Iowa, trying to get the farmer movement. The farmer is really kind of shut off from where we were last week. We've seen some dribs and drabs of a farmer movement, but nothing like we had seen, you know, in the previous 30 days of just solid farmer movement. We think that corn, the farmer is probably 75-80% sold on corn. And, you know, the corn that he does have to sell that's left, I think it's probably in pretty tight hands. You know, you've covered any operating notes that you may have had to clean up. And you've got March 1 cash rents coming up here. Guys have probably already made the sale to get that money. So, you know, what's going to come next, I think, is probably going to come, you know, once we get this crop in the ground. I mean, there'll be a little bit of sales here before that, but I think it's going to be the next flush of corn, you know, without paying $5 or, you know, a higher number without the board. I think it's going to come after spring planting. One of the bigger things this week, a lot of chatter about the soy to corn ratio. That's getting a lot of attention. You know, we made a new low on that for at 2.09 here this week, and it's got a lot of people talking. You know, you've got the outlook, the USDA outlook meetings here on the 27th. First thing in the morning, I think it's like 8:15 is when we'll have the USDA's projected acreage number. It has in the past been kind of a market mover, but we're starting to hear some pretty salty numbers. We've kind of went back and looked at some of the historical numbers of looking what the ratio was, you know, coming into that report and some of the USDA guidance in previous years. And it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities to see that the USDA come in and raise, you know, corn acres from, you know, 90.6 this year to 95 million acres. I've even heard some whisper numbers of 96, 97 million acres. That would be a game changer if they, you know, the USDA posted that type of number. I don't, about as aggressive, I think, as I can get, just looking at the historical numbers, would be kind of a 95 million acres. You start to plug that into next year's S&D. I was talking with Luke and Colton here earlier. You know, you take that kind of number with record demand of 15.3 for next year, and that gives you ending stocks of about 2.124, which would be about close to 14% stocks to use. So, and that's with using a 182.5 yield, you know, and that's not the aggressive trend line yield. That's more of a shorter term trend line yield. So we could cure a lot of our ails here come 2 weeks here if the USDA prints a 95 million acres number. I don't, you know, I mean, that's just kind of what we're hearing. And so we just need, you know, even though the market looks pretty bullish here nearby, we need to be cognizant of those types of numbers. So, Colton, how about soybeans?
Yeah, thanks, Brent. Little bit surprising week this week for soybeans. We did see some pretty early breakdowns in prices, and that ratio that Brent had talked about on the soybean to corn was already historically tight. And we actually saw that take a jump forward. It actually went further and actually, you know, my thought was I didn't think that beans could separate themselves from what corn was doing much more than it already had. And it said, well, that's step aside, because it absolutely did there in the middle of the week. And we recovered some. We fell all the way down to the 100-day moving average on the March contract, did find support there and bounced off of that, and then are starting to find a little bit of resistance at the 20-day moving average. So we did salvage a decent week, but generally lower. I'll get to the price action here. March beans ended up down 13.5 cents on the week at 10.36. Month to date, we've got beans down 6 cents. November beans down 5.5 cents on the week at 10.52. but are holding just above water for the month, up a penny. March meal down 550 on the week, back below $300 at 295.90. That's pretty well similar to what we are on the month, down 520. Oil has been the brighter spot, but faded some of its early week gains. Ended up closing up 9 cents higher at 46.07. That is off 4 cents still on the week. Looking at the spread action, as Brent mentioned, generally it was a wider path for the spreads on the week. You had the March, May, that week in the penny going home at 17 cent carry. That represents 60% of full carry. It did make a new low at an 18 cent carry there towards the middle of the week. But light corn, it wanted to bounce a little bit as we got towards the end of the week. On the meal spread side, the March, May meal spread weakened 30 cents this week, closed up shop at 820. Actually, saw quite a bit of volatility. It feels like we're starting to get a little bit of footing near this 80% of full carry mark. And that's despite just the heaviness that we hear in the cash markets. Board crush, March crush on the week, up $2.40, that would be 2.5 cents, at 122 going home. So board crush, saw a little bit of improvement, largely due to the pullback in soybeans and the improvement in oil. And certainly oil share is helping to boost that level. Fair amount of refreshed estimates came in this week for the Brazilian crop as they continue to look to harvest those soybeans in that country. Obviously, you had a WASDE report as well. So we'll go through some of those. Start the week, though, Ag Rule did come out with the harvest pace for Brazil at 15% complete as of this past Thursday. We'll get another look on Monday as far as the update goes, but we're generally still behind pace. But based on the weather that we saw this week and the feedback we got from some local contacts, it does seem like there was a very active week all over the country, and including Mato Grosso, where we've seen the most delays take place. Export inspections came in at about 1 million tons, so we're still seeing plenty of beans being executed on, and our season to date total at 535 million thus far is 24% above last year. That compares to the USDA's forecasted 20% increase on that. So we are seeing the pace be where it needs to be on the soybeans to be able to hit the USDA's number. But no doubt when we talk about sales, we're definitely going to see what feels like a winding down book on that. As Brent mentioned, the WASDE didn't see a whole lot of changes on corn, and same thing for soybeans. We actually didn't see any changes at all to the U.S. balance sheets. There was no change to the Brazilian soybean production number at 169, despite several and I would say most characters in the or analysts in the industry calling for a 170 plus. We did not see them make any changes. We did see them cut the Argentine soybean crop by 3 million tons. That went straight into a deduction of their ending stocks and rippled down to lowering the world ending stocks. So we did see those move lower. There's still plenty of skepticism and thoughts that any further cuts to the Argentina crop is likely going to be met and offset by increases to the Brazilian crop. CONAB was out 2 days after the WASDE report. It had a slight reduction, less than 1 million tons on its soybean production, 166. So there is a 3 million ton spread between USDA and CONAB. I would tell you in recent history, that's actually pretty narrow. I think last year it was pretty steady at a 7 million ton spread. So we actually seeing a little bit better agreement out of that group. I'd mentioned there was several folks that came out with updated estimates. We did actually see one group, I'm going to butcher this, but Patria Agrigonis did see a cut to their soybean forecast to 166. That was down from 168. So that was the only group that showed a decrease on the week. But you got Ag Resource at 172. You got Safras and Mercado up a million tons this week at 175. That is the highest that I've seen. Oh, who else? I was thinking there was a couple more. But anyway, several are seeing a forecasted production that is above that 170 million ton crop. Of course, as I said, USDA is at 169. On the Argentina side, a couple of updates there. AIQ is the lowest forecast that I've seen for Argentina soybeans at 45 million tons. As mentioned, the USDA cut their estimate by 3 million tons down to 49 million ton crop. That's still a million tons above last year, but they are noting the deterioration of the quality that the Rosario Grain Exchange has been pointing to in the beige with their weekly crop estimates. And so we did see some adjustments lower. So we'll see what that ultimately looks like. Weather does show that some much needed rains fell across most of Argentina this week to help some of the crop stresses in those areas. So we'll see what the crop conditions look like moving forward, but it feels today like the USDA made the move that they needed to really get ahead of this Argentina crop. What else on the cash side of things? We had what did we have? We had the river basis. Did see some improvements on the week. CIF was able to outpace what barge freight did, unlike what we saw on corn. I'm showing FOB St. Louis barge numbers up about 3 cents for February, down a penny for March, up 8 cents for April, flat for May, and down a nickel for June. On the week. So we did see some improvements above and beyond the appreciation that we saw on barge freight. And a lot of the barge freight appreciation was really on the Illinois, not as much on the in the St. Louis market. So there's a little bit of a difference there in looking at some of those FOB numbers. On the cash side, we did see a net increase across the 54 processors that we tracked. We saw the average change across those 54 processors improve by a penny on the week, still down 7 cents compared to a month ago and down 11 cents from where we were at a year ago. But this week we did see 12 Eastern plants firmer. And 7 Western plants firmer on the week. So you still had a few characters that that trended a touch lower on the week. But generally, we're seeing a little bit of stability on the soybean processing side. And so we'll see if we can't catch a bit of an uptrend. As Brent mentioned, the farmer had been pretty quiet. We did see some beans shake loose today. It definitely feels like the commercial has plenty of bean ownership, so any big pops in basis are likely going to be met with pretty good selling. Two things I wanted to mention as we wrap up. We do have a NOPA crush report that is going to be coming out on Tuesday. Remember, we are closed for the observation of President's Day on Monday, so it is pushed off to a Tuesday report. 2.45 million bushels is the analyst estimate for the January crush. That would be Just about 2 million bushels less than December's record. Bear in mind, we did have a couple of crush plants that were added into the NOPA number last month in Cherryvale and Castleton. But the crush number, you know, if you plug in that number and use roughly what the market shares have been, that would put us at a year-to-date crush that's 6% ahead of where we were at a year ago, versus the USDA anticipating a 5% increase. So our crush pace thus far is able to hit that level, a big number that is going to be watched and anticipated on this report is the soy oil stockpiles. We're expecting to see basically a flat stocks number. So we really need to see the stocks of soybean oil continue to remain under control despite the record production. We need that signal that the usage, whether that be for exports or in renewable diesel space, we just need to make sure that that stays under control, because soybean oil is going to be paying the bills and keeping these plants going. If we end up having a soybean oil stocks problem, that's going to be really concerning for when we think about the crush margins as we look ahead. As Britt mentioned, we did a little bit of calculating and looking ahead at 25-26. From what we've seen in recent years, is a combined corn to bean acreage number of around 177. So if we use Brent's 95 million planted acres, that leaves us with 82 million planted acres of soybeans. I'm using a trend line yield at 52. That matches our record from all the way back in 16-17. I plug that in using the, you know, the carry-in stocks that we're forecast to have, standard amount of imports that comes out with 4.6 billion bushel of production. I left crush and exports unchanged versus this year, and all that comes out to have a 336 million bushel carryout. That represents 8.3% stocks to use. So that would represent a decline of about 45 million bushels from where their current forecasted ending stocks are for this year, and generally keeps the supplies of soybeans and stocks to use ratio pretty flat. You know, definitely flat over the past 3 years, but really, despite, you know, some fluctuations in the acres and working higher and this ballooning of the production that we've had, a record crush and good enough exports has really been able to keep the ending stocks under control. So be really interesting to see how the acres discussion plays out. But as Brent said, you know, these acres can really start swinging the pendulum back the other way as we look ahead. So with that, I will leave it there and kick it to Luke to wrap us up with wheat. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Colton. Well, the wheat market has now turned in three positive weeks in a row. To be fair, the entire weekly gain for this week was put in today. You had March Chicago up 22.25 cents to $6 on the nose. You had Kansas City March up 23 cents to 6.21 1/4, and Minneapolis was up 16.75 cents to 6.33 1/2. Lots of questions about why wheat was so strong today. You know, lately the market's been lacking definitive direction, kind of riding the coattails of the corn market, but you know, wheat was the clear winner today, outgaining all the other major commodities. You know, with wheat more of a global commodity and the U.S. dollar reaching for a new 2-month low today, that's generally a supportive factor. We've also seen a lot more talk here recently about winter kill potential in both the Black Sea and the U.S. You've got extreme cold moving in next week, limited snow cover for protection. And I know it's tough to kill a wheat crop, but it does seem like the funds may be taking this opportunity to maybe cover some of their shorts. And the threat of winter kill seems like as good a reason as any today, especially when you look at spring wheat as the dog in the market today, only up 16 versus the winter wheat contracts up 20 plus. I also think part of today's rally might have been technically driven. You know, we haven't seen a test of the 200-day moving average since early October. It comes in just above 601. March Chicago punched through it today and then settled just below it. So depending on how the forecast looks when traders come in Tuesday, we could see further technical breakout if we get, you know, if we can get a close above that 200-day moving average. Coming into the week, managed money was net short 82,000 contracts of soft red and 35,000 contracts of hard red. They were net buyers on the week last week, buying 24,000 contracts of soft red and 6,000 of hard red. I think it's possible we may see that short position pared back a little bit more on today's COT report after the price action late last week. But with today's gains, it may be even closer to even than where this afternoon's report is going to show us. So, you know, someone has finally started to find some value in wheat when priced against corn. And not that corn has lost anything, but wheat is definitely doing some work here to build back its premium. You know, we've been talking about that wheat premium to corn here for the last several weeks. When you look at where we closed today, Chicago wheat's premium to corn is back up to $1.04 versus the long-term average of closer to $1.40. You know, that's up another dime this week. It's up 53 cents from the low that was made on January 27th. Speaking of weather, when you talk about this forecast, you know, U.S. plains are expected to see average temps 20 plus degrees below normal next week. That's been some, you know, there's been some recent snowfall in parts of Nebraska and Kansas, but the cold is expected to reach down into Oklahoma and Texas, where they don't have any snow cover to insulate the crop. So, you know, with that forecast, there is threat of winter kill, and I think that played well into the market action today. When we look at the Black Sea, they've been dry with no snow cover. They are expected to see some colder temps over the next week as well, not as extreme as what we're supposed to see here in the U.S., and they do have some snow in the forecast that may help ease that threat of winter kill in that part of the world. France released their first winter wheat conditions rating since early December. They're at 73% good to excellent, which sounds good, but it's actually down from 86% good to excellent on their last reading in early Dece, 20% lower than their February conditions from back in 2023. And India remains hot and dry during the fill stage of their crop. Remember, they are the world's third largest wheat producer after China and the EU. So this weather situation looks to be a little bit of a bullish catalyst in the market for right now, especially when you consider the fact that the USDA dropped world ending stocks by another 1.3 million tons in Tuesday's report. And, you know, that's keeping them the tightest since 2016. When you look at export data on the week, inspections hit a 19-week high at 536,000 tons. The largest destination was the Philippines, and they've been our second largest wheat buyer this year behind Mexico. The inspections data puts our export pace 28.5% ahead of last year, with the USDA forecasting a 20% year-over-year increase. But the sales data doesn't quite back that up at this point in the game. Sales were decent this week at 569,000 tons. That was a seven-week high. But when you look at the year-to-date pace, it's only 11% ahead of last year. So actually behind the pace needed to reach the USDA estimate. I think the positive thing to note here about exports is that the window for U.S. exports should remain open for a while, with Russia's export quota at roughly half of what they shipped the second half of the marketing year last year. USDA did lower Russia and Ukraine exports by 500,000 tons each on Tuesday. But with their Russian estimate still at 45.5 million tons, I think there's a lot of analysts out there that still think that's 2 to 3 million tons too high. Sovicon came out and pegged January 1st Russian wheat stocks at 28.7 million tons yesterday. That's down 20% from last January. So, you know, with the tightness there in the Black Sea, I think U.S. wheat may find some homes this spring, with the main competition being Southern Hemisphere supplies. So with all that, I still think there's a couple things in my mind that have the potential to limit upside here in the wheat market. One is the Australian crop. It seems to be getting bigger. The Grain Industry Association of Western Australia estimated their Western Australian crop at 12.45 million tons today. That's up 4.75 million from last year and 1.65 million from last month's estimate. So Southern Hemisphere supplies continue to add some weight here. And then with President Trump trying to set up a summit in Munich for the Russia and Ukraine conflict to negotiate a peace treaty there, that's, I think, the biggest potential bearish flag for the wheat market, in my opinion. You know, from what I understand, there's an additional 10 to 15 million tons of grain production potential that could be unlocked there if they're able to strike a deal. I don't really know what the timing of that looks like in terms of getting something done in time for spring. you know, or if they need to demine fields or what have you. But longer term, I could definitely see that as a headwind. And then we talked about it on the WASD call, but China's feed grain demand feels softer. You got the USDA lowering their corn import estimate to 10 million tons and the wheat import estimate to 8 million tons. You know, on the wheat side, that's off 5.5 million from last year. And that piggybacks off the story from last week that China redirected 600,000 tons of wheat shipments from Australia. So there's definitely some factors here that have the potential to push wheat one direction or another. And I think with today's close ahead of the three-day weekend, you know, it feels like we're kind of right at that inflection point, right at the 200-day moving average there. So, you know, we'll see if the funds want to push forward and continue to cover their short position given the tight world feed grain stocks, or if there's just too much headline risk to get bullish from here. Other than that, you know, just one more reminder, markets are closed Sunday night and Monday in observance of President's Day. Markets will reopen Monday night, and most of the weekly government reports will be delayed by a day due to the holiday. And that's all I have for today. Everybody have a good weekend.